The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Laura Kovacs, and I'm honored to introduce our guest this evening. Bob Roth is one of the most experienced and respected meditation leaders in the United States. For more than 45 years, he's sought to lessen the emotional and physical toll stress places on our lives through this 5,000-year-old practice. Training first under Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, one of the 20th century's most popular meditation gurus. He currently serves as the CEO of the David Lynch Foundation, a charity which has brought meditation to more than 500,000 youth in underserved schools in 35 countries, to veterans and their families who suffer from post-traumatic stress, and women and children who are survivors of domestic violence. He also directs the Center for Leadership Performance and hosts the SiriusXM radio show, Success Without Stress. In his new book, Strength and Stillness, he explains the three types of meditation, breaks down the science behind them, and in simple language explains how transcendental meditation is the best way to eliminate stress from our lives. Please welcome Bob Roth to the Free Library.
It's nice to see you all. I enjoy this introduction because this dating. I'm going to sort of give you some reflection. So 50 years ago, February 1968, if someone were to say, oh, Bob is going to be teaching meditation for 45 years, 50 years ago, I was in my senior year at Redwood High School in Marin County. I'd been born in Washington, D.C., and my father was a veteran and a doctor, and we moved out to San Francisco, and he got a job at the VA hospital in San Francisco. And I was 17 years old. My family was very political. I mean, my family was, so we talked politics all the time. I like to say my family was so political that I knew that I was a Democrat before I knew I was Jewish. It's true. It was only later on did I discover that I... And so in February 1968, I had a column in my high school newspaper. I was a co-editor of the newspaper, and the column was entitled, wait for this, The Gripes of Roth. And all I did was, you know, kvetch and complain about the issue to this. And then I worked for Bobby Kennedy. And I love Bobby Kennedy, and I worked for Bobby Kennedy when he was running for his Democratic nomination for president. And on June 1st, 1968, I went to the San Francisco Civic Auditorium, and I saw Bobby Darin sing, and Bobby Kennedy spoke. And at the end, I didn't identify with Republican or Democrat. I just wanted a more equitable society, world. I just wanted that. The other stuff was noise. And I felt this sense of wholeness, that something good could come from this. And of course, 4 days later, he was assassinated in Los Angeles. And for a 17-year-old kid, by the way, I am going to get to meditation. Just in case you're wondering, it's not just history of my life, but I'm sort of explaining this because when people think, what's a meditation teacher like, a traditional, I ain't that guy. I mean, I love science. I love practical stuff. I'm really down to earth. I'm really glad Fly Eagles Fly. I mean, I'm really glad about that. I'm not into woo-woo. And so when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated, I was on my way to the University of California at Berkeley in 1968. And I resolved, after he was assassinated, that I was going to go to law school and become a U.S. senator just like Bobby Kennedy and affect change, like social transformation, affect change so that any individual had an equal opportunity, this is, you know, idealism 17, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I went to Berkeley, and very quickly, for me, the experience of politics in Berkeley at that time, when I wasn't to the extreme of any direction, and I wasn't a hippie, and I wasn't a druggie, I just wanted to make a better world, I realized that for me, politics was not going to be an avenue for me to heal the soul of the nation. Those were words I thought in those days. And so my mother was an educator, so I thought, okay, I'll write educational curriculum, and I'll work with inner city school kids, and we'll start early on, and we'll give them the tools to grow at an early age. So I'm going to school full-time, I'm working full-time, there are army tanks parked outside my door because of the Vietnam War and because of this crazy little vacant lot which was called People's Park, and people were getting killed because of that. This is all for your history books. You can, you know, Google People's Park. And I was pretty tightly wound. And a friend of mine, Peter Stevens, who is probably the only guy in Berkeley that wasn't nuts, I thought, maybe I was just, you know, sunglasses, I just saw myself, but he was really down to earth, and he suggested I learn something called transcendental meditation. And my first, I had two responses. Not on your life, and I have enough issues with my own religion, because I thought it was a religion. But he was this down-to-earth guy, and he said, no, Bobby, they called me Bobby then, it's not. You could learn this, and you can be skeptical, and it'll help you. So I trusted him, and I learned. And it was so outside of my realm, but I learned it. And that was what I liked about it, too, because I wasn't into all this stuff. I was just doing something that was going to wake up my brain and allow me to sleep better and feel calmer and feel a sort of a sense of connectedness because, you know, your first year in college is insane anyway, and this was like on steroids. And I started, and the immediate experience was so profound of relaxation, physical relaxation. And I was cautious, you know, I don't want to be some strange thing here. And I just settled down deeply. My mind just settled down. And I remember having the thought, this is something real. This isn't like an altered state. This is just me deeply settled. And afterwards, one of the first thoughts that I had, because I felt really good afterwards, was not, oh, I want to get enlightened. It was, oh, I want to teach this to inner city school kids. So that was June 28th, 1969. And I became a teacher in 1972, and I started teaching it in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I taught it at San Quentin Prison to inmates and guards, and I taught it at Apple Computer later on, and I taught it at General Motors in Fremont, and I taught it at schools in the Mission District, if you know San Francisco, and Hunters Point. And then almost 13 years ago, I got together with David Lynch, who is a very dear friend, and there could be no one more opposite than me than David Lynch. Just because of just, and yet we're like brothers. And I said to David, I really want to start a foundation that's going to bring this meditation, because he was a meditator, bring this to kids. And he said, great. And then I said, I'd really like to call it the David Lynch Foundation. I don't think he was paying that close of attention. He said, great. And I said, can I write a press release? This is announcing it. And he said, great. Probably was editing, you know, Inland Empire or something. And I wrote a press release and I sent it out with this intention. We both had an intention to do something good. I sent out the press release. It got picked up by Agence France-Presse, Reuters, and Associated Press. And 2 days later, because of David, it was in the almost the front pages of 1,500 newspapers. And David called me up and he said, what's a 501c3? And I said, I'm not sure. We learned about it. We just had a desire to offer something good. And now the foundation is almost 13 years old. We provided scholarships for 600,000 inner city school kids to learn to meditate in all over the United States, in the Middle East, in Africa, Congo, Uganda, all over Latin America, everywhere, in Buddhist schools, in Muslim schools, in Catholics, because it's not a religion. And so now we sit here today where meditation, see, I did bring it around to meditation, where meditation is more mainstream. How many people here have tried some form of meditation? Yeah. Now, 10 years ago, how many people, I remember when I was, you know, I was supposed to be the senator, my friends, my parents' friends would say to them, this is like 22 years old, so what's Bobby up to? And they'd say, teaching meditation. They'd say, what? Teaching meditation. No one wanted to use the word. And yet today, it's the tipping point is tipped. There's a transformation. Doctors prescribe it. There are books on it. There are tapes. It's just hospitals have meditation courses. So what happened? So what I want to do now is I'm going to sort of explain a little bit of what happened, why we are where we are today. I'm going to talk about the science of meditation writ large. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about transcendental meditation. And then I'm going to take questions. And in the process, if there's time, I want to show a little four-minute video of the work that we're doing with veterans and kids, because I'm very proud of it. That's what I love the most. So, and then there'll be a time for questions. Why so much interest in meditation in general? I think there's three reasons. I think the problem of stress is more severe now than it's ever been. Whoa. That was a cue I didn't know I gave. Yeah, that's fine. That's good. Bring it down. But don't start the video yet. So I think the problem of stress is more severe now than it's ever been before. I wish I had that much power, you know. Dinner. Huh?
It's coming.
Yeah, that's right. So, the problem of stress, more severe than ever, particularly among our children, but in our lives. It's not that we're just more aware of it, it's that it's much worse than it ever. It's 24/7. You can't get away from it at all. And we also know what it does to the prefrontal cortex, to the amygdala, the fear center. We know all these different, what it does to cortisol levels, which is the stress hormone. It's, this is not an exaggeration, killing us, either slowly or quickly. 80% of all illnesses, disorders, are said to be caused by stress or exacerbated by stress. So you have the stress of living, but there's another stress. There's a stress of the pressure of needing to perform at a higher and higher level. Our children feel that. I got to get into the right kindergarten, otherwise I won't make it to Penn. You know, it's like one of those things. There's just the pressure at an early age. And with job changing, and I have to, you know, they say you have to be a perpetual learner. Things are changing so fast. I have a job at 22, and how many jobs am I going to have to relearn? So that need to perform. So that's the first thing. Stress. Second, where do we go when we have some problem, some disorder? Medicine cabinet. Oh, I got a headache? Take an Advil. I got, you know, upset stomach? Take a Tums or whatever. Well, there ain't no pill that we can take that can prevent stress. And there, in case there's kids here, there is no pill that we can take to cure it, to actually treat it. We mask it with several espressos to get going in the morning because we're so exhausted, and we mask it by many glasses of wine or something in the evening to slow down, and we manage it with our children with learning disorders, which is, can be fueled by stress, with Adderall and Ritalin and sleeping pills. So we, all that, but the tumor of stress does not go away. And the third reason why there's so much interest in meditation in general, and transcendental meditation specifically, right now, science, and more science. On transcendental meditation alone, there are now 400 studies published in peer-reviewed journals, the American Medical Association's journal, the American Heart Association Journal, so many journals showing that something significant, substantive takes place when we take 20 minutes out in the morning and the evening to meditate. And not just transcendental meditation, many mindfulness techniques and other approaches. So now I'm going to segue into what the heck does meditation mean? Everybody with me? Okay. What does it mean, meditation? How, you know, what am I doing? Am I doing TM? Am I doing, I listen to guided meditation? How does it all fit in? What is this confusing realm? And to understand meditation, I want to use an analogy. You're on a little boat, and you're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And all of a sudden, you get these giant 30, 40-foot high waves. Big waves. That's like three, four stories high. And you're this little boat. You look up, you go, oh my gosh, the whole ocean is in upheaval. Whole ocean is a bit of an exaggeration, because if you could do a cross-section out there, you'd realize that you got these 30, 40-foot high waves, but the ocean in reality is a mile or more deep. And while the nature of the ocean can be turbulent on the surface, by its nature, the ocean is pretty darn silent and calm at its depth. And that is the analogy we use for the mind. So the mind, we say, the surface of the mind can be like these waves. And I like to, they call it the monkey mind. I like to call it the gotta mind. I gotta do this, and I gotta do that, and I gotta call him, and I gotta call her, and I gotta make a list. Then I gotta find the list. Then I gotta make a new list. And I gotta slow down, but I really gotta get going. And I gotta get to sleep, but I really gotta get up. Anybody? Not? And it's a natural human desire. Natural. Everybody has it. I don't care where you live in the world, anywhere. What your philosophy of life is, just human desire. I'd like to have some inner calm, some inner peace. The noise, you know, just sometimes it just doesn't stop. You fall asleep for 2 hours and then you're up and can't get back to sleep. I'm sure no one has ever had that experience. Just inner calm, inner peace. Also, inner inspiration. We can feel like we're just going through the motions. So inner, the operative word is inner. And the question is there such a thing as an inner? And if so, how do we get there? So the purpose of meditation throughout the ages has equated with the term equanimity, silence, calm, but also power, strength, focus, clarity. Okay, now we have that model. Everybody still awake? Okay, good. No, sometimes people say, my voice is so relaxing, I'll be talking. Head is back. You laugh, it's very disconcerting for me. Hey, you. I'm being honest. It used to be felt that all meditations were the same. They were all the same. Didn't matter what you did. I remember when I first learned, oh yeah, meditation. You can jog, you can listen to music, you could think a mantra, you could breathe, you could do anything. It's all the same. And it really was just hogwash. And then the first research came out, and it was all the same, and they all did the same thing. But in the last 15 years, and this is stuff I'm really interested in, the brain research, understanding the effects of what happens in the brain when you do different types of meditation, because everything we experience impacts our brain in a different way. If you listen to classical music, it affects one part of your brain. If you listen to electronic music, it affects another part of your brain. If you watch a romantic comedy, it affects one part of your brain. If you watch a David Lynch film, it affects another part of your brain. Just different parts of the brain, fine. So the hypothesis, or what the researchers did, let's look at all these different types of meditation, let's see what they affect the brain. Turns out there's three basic types of meditation with all the stuff. First is called focused attention. Focused attention is the classic meditation you think of when you think of meditation. Someone sitting cross-legged, back upright, attempting to clear the mind of thoughts. At the end of a yoga class, they say, okay, now clear your mind of thoughts. I have a very busy mind. This is before I learned TM. When a teacher said, because I liked yoga, and they said, okay, now I want you to clear your mind of thoughts. My first thought was, right. And then I'll create peace in the Middle East. Because it's very busy. But the idea is it's a cognitive process because thoughts are seen to be as the disruptor of calm. Waves are the disruptor of the ocean. Stop the waves, and you have a calm ocean. When you do a focused meditation, what happens is it creates something called gamma brain waves, which are 20 to 50 cycles per second, particularly in the left frontal lobe. This is executive functioning. Focused attention is an effective tool, cognitive training. It trains us to think in a focused way. Second type of meditation, open monitoring. Open monitoring is an observational tool. How many people here have tried some mindfulness meditation techniques? Yeah, mindfulness. I've been trained in all of these. I teach transcendental meditation, but I've been trained in all of these. And what I'm talking about here is not better than, it's different outcomes. You can't say that sit-ups are better than push-ups. They have different outcomes. And I'm a strong advocate of many tools in a toolbox, but I'm also a strong advocate of understanding what it is we're doing when we do it. So the second is open monitoring. Here the idea is thoughts themselves are not the disruptor of calm, but I'm doing a broad brush here. Because I've been training with Jon Kabat-Zinn and Sharon Salzberg, many different people. So thoughts themselves are not the disruptor of calm, but in some regards, the content of thoughts. So if I don't know anybody named Joe, and I have a thought of Joe, but if Joe done me wrong 2 days ago or 20 years ago, and the thought of Joe comes up, so in a mindfulness approach, I learn to dispassionately observe, witness my thoughts, my feelings, the environment. I can do body scans. I can watch my breath. I can, again, watch my thoughts. I can observe and be present in the environment. All these different things. Because in that stepping back brings an equanimity, among other things. Open monitoring creates what's called theta brain waves. That's 6 to 8 cycles per second. That's onset of dream. It also, when we close our eyes, then there's alpha 2 brain waves. That's the occipital part of the brain in the back of the brain. So there's some calm in this alpha 2 because you're not seeing things. Also, there's some beta brain waves, which are waking state. But open monitoring has been found to be a very good coping tool. Third type of meditation, self-transcending. And that's where transcendental meditation comes in. And it's different. In self-transcending, we recognize that there, this is very interesting to me, we recognize that there is a vertical dimension to the mind. I feel things deeply. I love this person profoundly. We have that moment that we call it like transcendence. You hold a newborn baby in your arms. Time falls away. With a partner, someone else, there's a moment of just unity. Athletes talk about the zone. They're rare moments in our life if we have them, but it's just that inner calm, silence, listening to music, it can happen, hiking in the woods, writing, anything, it can happen like a flow. So there's a deep trend, there's a deep vertical dimension to the mind. This, we call it this transcendence. People say, oh, the word transcendental, that's such a strange word, meditation. Well, to transcend, transcendence, we love that. A transcendent moment, a transcendent athlete. Nick Foles, pretty transcendent, those few games. But just where he was in a zone, different than ordinary. You look up the word transcendence in the dictionary, it means to go beyond ordinary human limitations. So transcendental meditation is a technique that gives, rather than stopping thoughts or dealing with thoughts here, gives effortless access to the quieter, more settled levels of our mind, and gives access to my own deep, quiet self. And when that happens, that's not just pure poetry here. When that happens, the brainwave pattern signature shifts to what's called alpha 1, particularly in the frontal lobe. And alpha 1 is a state of deep centeredness, deep settledness, and wide awake inside. So completely different. Also, that alpha 1 spreads across the whole brain is bathed in that calming effect of alpha 1 in a coherent way. But here's something more tangible for you. How much time do I have left, Laura?
15 more minutes.
Oh, okay. This is Laura. She does a great job with this. Because the mind and body are so intimately connected, if I'm anxious in my mind, what's my body like? Right? So in transcendental meditation, the active, agitated, thinking mind, we hypothesize that there is a level of the mind deep within every human being right now, every one of us, just a hypothesis, every one of us, a level of the mind that is already settled and calm and quiet and yet wide awake. And we further hypothesize that's the source of our creativity, intelligence, energy, and I'll come back to the creativity thing because there's some new brain research on that. And in transcendental meditation, we learn how to access that. And as the heated, agitated thinking mind settles down, do you know that thing you say, oh, that little boy is a hothead, and he's boiling over with rage, and his poor little body's so tense? And we also have that thing, oh, that little kid is cool, calm, and collected. And we have that thought, cooler minds will prevail. We know that. So the mind in transcendental meditation goes from that, gotta, to just settled effortlessly. And when that happens, here's really interesting, the body gains a state of rest in many regards deeper than the deepest part of deep sleep. And one of the key indicators of that is something called cortisol. You know, you ever heard the word cortisol? Cortisol is a stress hormone. It's secreted by the adrenal glands, which sit on top of the kidneys. And we need cortisol to get going in life. We need cortisol, but we don't need to be drowning in cortisol. We don't need to flood the system with cortisol. It's become known as the stress hormone. Too much cortisol undermines the immune system. That's why a highly stressed person, you know, gets sick a lot. It undermines digestion. We don't metabolize food properly. Cortisol floods the hippocampus, which is the memory center. That's why your child can have studied really hard for an exam and then come in for that test and get tense and can't remember anything, even though they've studied. So it's not a good thing. Understatement. When you get a good night's sleep, and it fluctuates, but cortisol levels will reset themselves, there's a reduction of about 10%. In 20 minutes of TM, cortisol levels drop 30 to 40% when you meditate. Now, this is not magic. This is not miraculous. This is an indication that the body is hardwired to take profound rest at will. We've just lost how to do it. I'm going to say a few other quick things. I want to explain how that works. How do we get from here? And I'm going to do this very briefly. There, many of you have asked where they can find out more information. And my book, by the way, talks about all this research, but then there's some talks you can go. So how do we get from here to here? And here's a key word, effortlessly. Focused attention is hard work. You have to clear your mind of thoughts. Open monitoring, less hard work. Transcendental meditation, no hard work. Effortless. How? I'm going to give you an example. You're sitting in a room and you're listening to what could be the worst music you've ever heard in your life. I mean, oh. What'd you say? Oh. Country music. But don't offend the other country lovers here. I liked Patsy Cline going way back. listening to some country music in the other and hating it in the other room, some of the most beautiful, extraordinary, elegant music, phenomenal you have ever heard in your life comes on. Where's your attention go? Turn this off, turn that up. You go on a vacation and you bring two books and one book is dreadful and you cannot read it for the life of you. Another book is great and hours go by. Here's the point. Listening and appreciating beautiful music is not an acquired skill. It's not like you really have to deliberate whether that is the most incredible music you, or that sunset or that painting. Your attention is drawn, but it goes outward. In transcendental meditation, we learn, and it's taught in one-to-one by a trained teacher, we learn how to give the attention of the mind an inward direction on that cross-section of the ocean. And without any effort whatsoever, the attention is just settles down inwardly. Because deeper levels, hypothetically, are supposed to be more satisfying. So the settling down happens automatically. We teach 10-year-old children who've never heard the word meditation before don't like tofu. And they learn to meditate as well as anybody else who has a PhD in psychology or physics. You're taught this in personal instruction. You're given what's called a mantra, which is a word or a sound that has no meaning, very simple. You're taught how to do it. What I would like to do now is I'd like to show, because now I'm coming back around to the thing I love the most, which is bringing this to children and adults who, I'm not sure someone needs it more, but who would never have access to this or even know about it. Because what happened in Florida, I think just traumatized us all. And what's going on in here in Philadelphia with the schools and poverty, just living in poverty, shrinks the prefrontal cortex, the executive functioning. There's something called adverse childhood experiences. If a child just sees violence in the neighborhood, has a parent be violent towards, or a caregiver towards another caregiver, someone is an addict, three of those in their life, it is almost a direct line, the prison pipeline. So we can put more armed guards in our schools. And we can, and I know they're doing this in Philadelphia, they're paying this one school $100 for a kid if they don't get into any violent acts. For the year, they're getting paid $100. Fine. But just that child being in an environment where they see violence every day or whatever is sentencing them to a life of too many ACEs, they're called ACEs, of either ill health, shortened lifespan, violence, sexual assault. It's just everything has its basis in this ACE. Adverse childhood experiences. So I'm going to show the video, but I want to tell you one thing and why I'm really excited to come to Philadelphia. 2 years ago, the University of Chicago Crime Lab, tough schools there, put out a request for proposal to any grassroots organization in Chicago. How can you help us reduce violence in the city, in the toughest schools, in the toughest neighborhoods in Chicago? 230 organizations submitted proposals. The Crime Lab accepted 3. And we were, the David Lynch Foundation, was one of those 3. And they were measuring arrests, particularly during the summer when school is out, attendance, grades, suspensions, expulsions. They gave us $300,000 to put the program in 2 or 3 pilot schools. And that money went for research, but it also meant our teachers became big brothers and big sisters in the school. They were there. Not only the kids meditated, they meditated twice a day in class. The results were so striking after the first year. Last year, they increased the budget to, now remember, this is Chicago. They don't have much money, to another $1 million last year. And the results were so striking. This year, the budget has been increased to $2.6 million more because it's working. Because children have a skill that they do first thing, it's not drugs. It's not a philosophy. They're not being taught be nice to one another. You're just a physical tool to let their poor little bodies and nervous systems get deep rest, heal themselves from within, and grow in resilience and power within themselves, and wake up the creative centers in the brain. We're working to replicate that in New York City, Washington, D.C. I really would love to bring this to Philadelphia, the same study, and also Atlanta. I want to go to Biloxi, Mississippi. I want to go everywhere to show, because everywhere children are suffering. So if we could now show this video, and then I'll take questions.
The idea of what you're doing, of putting this into schools, I think is a fabulous thing.
Before, I held everything in. And when I couldn't take it anymore, I took it out on somebody else. Now, it just goes away now.
I feel like all the stress is just leaving my body, all the situations and problems are just clearing out.
I got more concentration, I social better, everything just like 2 times better, basically.
It took me roughly 5 years to admit that I had PTSD. Transcendental meditation has taken the stress out of my life. It has made me relax. The anger's gone.
Just because you can't see a wound doesn't mean it's not there. To know that something as small of a concept of 20 minutes twice a day can make me feel like I feel now, that's a gift that you can't buy.
Within 90 days, I was off all the anxiety pills, antidepressants, the pain medication. You don't have to suffer anymore. There's a better way.
I didn't know I had post-traumatic stress. The first experience meditating with TM, my body got a chance to just really relax. And my self-esteem is a lot better than it's ever been in my entire life.
When I started meditating, it changed my demeanor. I really felt like it changed the dynamics for me, the way I responded or interacted with people. And also not sitting like this, sitting like this, because I got rest.
I went through a really dark time in my life where I didn't want to wake up in the morning at all. Now when I wake up in the morning, I feel happy, I feel blessed.
Meditation has significantly helped my recovery, and I think it should be taught in every rehab facility there is.
Transcendental meditation is the only proven form of meditation to reduce blood pressure. It affects the cortisol, the epinephrine. The whole system just relaxes.
When people start to meditate, they're doing things more effectively and more efficiently, and time seems to open up.
I meditate before every performance now. I find that it keeps me out of my head. It's a much more enjoyable way to perform. TM has helped me to be more open to new possibilities.
I really have found that I am more aware of those stressful moments that are still going to happen even after meditation, but my reaction to them. I recognize them, and I just am at a peaceful state.
You have to give yourself a break. You have to give yourself a moment to revive, unplug, rejuvenate, and transcendental meditation does that for me.
I think this is what people need. They don't need high-minded talk so much as results.
Real change for the good truly begins within.
Questions?
Does one name stand out in your in the empirical work that's been done, you know, with brain scans and science of the effects of meditation? Does one name of one researcher stand out?
Dr. Fred Travis, T-R-A-V-I-S, is an expert, published over 70 studies on the effects of transcendental meditation on the brain. He's a neuroscientist. So he's the one, but he also is now, we're working with Dr. Robert Doty at Stanford University. They're going to start comparing brain scans, different types of meditation. There's never been any sort of direct comparisons, which I think needs to happen. Andy Newberg, he's great. He's spoken at many of our events. Andrew Newberg, he's great. We had a conference that he spoke at UPenn. Yeah. Yes.
Bobby, we understand that TM is very helpful and practical things and all that's been covered here with students and veterans and things. Can you talk a little bit about how the TM program, TM technique would contribute to our spiritual life?
Mm. Yes. First, you define spiritual. You define spiritual life. Yes, I'm sorry. I went a little, but anyway. Yes, define spiritual.
I guess I would think of it as acting from silence in a powerful way, but I can't say what it is.
No, that's fine.
I can't say what it is that's deeper, but there's something deeper.
But is it a religious experience or non-religious experience?
I'm sorry.
Huh? Higher power. So this is beautiful. That transcendent experience, my own inner quiet self, is the same experience that the wise throughout the ages have described, whether it's Plato, Lao Tzu, great religious leaders, great anyone, of that silent, that abiding silence that lies with the kingdom of heaven. You can use any word you want to say. But it's that is experience. So yes, the purpose of meditation, the purpose of transcendental meditation is not just to access that my own quiet, unbounded self, but not lose it when I come into my daily life. And that's the beautiful thing that I think the research, I'm sorry, I keep going back to research, because I like to take this out of the realm of theory and show that when you're having that experience, what is your name, by the way?
Sorry?
Your name?
Rod.
So just Rod. When Roddy. Okay. And I'm Bobby. When you have that experience, it shows up, it lights up the whole EEG machine. And what you see is, as I was talking about earlier, this spread of alpha brainwave coherence. And that lasts after the meditation. And the whole purpose of transcendental meditation is not as an end in itself. Oh, I get away from the kids for 20 minutes. But rather, so that I'm more myself, I have more to give. I like to define spirituality personally as the highest human values of compassion and kindness and also discernment, clarity, focus, all those high human values, those begin to be lived in our daily life. So it's a beautiful question, and yes, that is the outcome. It's not just I have an experience and it goes away. The purpose is to bring whatever's inside out. Okay. Yes, sir.
Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
I'm Dougie.
Hi, Dougie.
I wanted to.
I think I opened a. Yeah. serves me right.
Yeah. I was just.
But is that D O G Y or is it I E? Because I'm a Y on Bobby.
D O U G I.
D O U G. Yeah. Okay. Doggy. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm curious how much of the foundation's focus is on victims of domestic violence.
We have four main outreaches. Veterans, the Department of Defense several years ago gave us a $2.4 million grant to do a study of the effects of TM on post-traumatic stress on post-9/11 veterans. It was done at a VA hospital in San Diego. And the results showed that the 20 minutes of TM were as effective, if not more effective, than anything else they've ever tried. And now we're working on a phase 3 clinical trial, which means 1,000 veterans. And then I've been told if we do that, there's 21 million veterans who in America, almost 1 million suffer from post-traumatic stress. With the preliminary findings replicated on a large level, any veteran in America who wants to learn to meditate will be covered by the VA. So that's one area, students. The third area is women who are survivors of domestic violence. And in New York City, we're working with the DA's office, Cyrus Vance Jr., and also they call something that's called the Family Justice Centers, which are these amazing portals for women to come and get vocational training, legal training, educational training, and they learn to meditate. And the city of New York has given us $250,000 to study the effects on these women. And there's the numbers of it's just unconscionable, the violence that's perpetrated among women and children. So that's the third area. And the fourth area we're just starting on is addiction, the substance use disorder problem. There's the big issue is, yes, you can send someone away for, if they have the money, for a 30-day treatment program and they don't drink or smoke or take drugs, but then they come back and then within a week or two they're back at it. So a study was done recently in Bethesda at the by the Friends Institute, which is a research study, that showed people who have alcohol use disorder, alcoholics, who came off of alcohol and then started to meditate, 6 months later, there was a 50% reduction in relapse, whereas the people who were not meditating, all of them relapsed. So those are the four main areas. My brother is very involved with the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. There's a big tie-in with anxiety and stress, with T-cell count. So just about anywhere, but our focus is those four main areas. You had a short question, and I just went on forever. I apologize.
Thank you so much for coming to Philadelphia. Yes. I wanted to ask you about longitudinal studies on TMers. I've been meditating for, I guess, about 35 years, and what's the next step? I know that there were the cities where you could go to another level and travel.
So there, it's a beautiful question. When you learn this technique to transcend, to settle down and dive within and experience your own quiet self, there are programs that you can do to sort of accelerate that. It's an optional thing, advanced techniques. Most people, you know, it's like some people take them, some people don't, many people don't, but there's a whole optional program that you have afterwards. I'd say there's 8 million people who've learned to meditate. They're wonderful, and maybe 500,000 or less, a few 100,000 have done that. But most people, the research is on the people who have just done this basic technique.
That was very close to the question I was going to ask. I took it more than 50 years ago, and after I had the lessons and went with my teacher, I sort of felt like I was left hanging. I just, because the teaching was over, I meditated for a while.
And what year did you start?
Probably in the 60s.
Yeah. So the TM organization, it's a nonprofit educational organization, has grown quite considerably. We have here in Philadelphia, we have, I like to say, the best teachers in America are here in Philadelphia, TM teachers. And they have a whole complete follow-up program, which is at your option if you choose to do it or not.
How does one access that?
You, afterwards, tm.org, okay. And you can ask for, you can put in where you're, and this is for anybody if you want to learn, tm.org, and you can find out there where your nearest teacher is. And if you've learned to meditate, there's never any more dues or anything. You can get started up right away.
So what I've discovered after all these years is
put the phone mic.
What I've discovered all these years, that life has taken me through so many challenges that I'm finally coming back to TM.
Yeah.
And it's really working. I haven't forgotten.
Yeah, great.
And it was after long suffering. Sometimes you need suffering to force you back into what works.
You know, you look at the, when you're in an airplane and you look at this river and it's going to the ocean, but it just wanders all over the place. So that's sort of, we look at our lives.
Yeah.
We do the best we can and we just come back to what's right,
right,
when it's time.
So I try not to regret and...
Oh, no,
and,
don't regret anything.
And think of time lost that I should have been doing it all.
No, don't do that.
It was a lesson. There were lessons that I learned that I never forgot.
And the beautiful thing is, you can start... Yeah, perfect.
Thank you.
So do you have anyone that you're connected with to try to get your program into the Philadelphia school system? And if not, I'd like to introduce you to someone. Okay.
There have been some schools that have had overtures where we're talking to. But the thing is for now, it is a parallel between the raising of the funds locally and then putting in the programs in schools. So in Chicago, that was raised by the MacArthur Foundation. So people, we sit and talk with them, we show them the research, and then when we have that, then usually, like in Chicago, we let the Chicago Public Schools pick the schools. And we said, give us your toughest ones, and it's just absolutely transformational. Yeah. But talk to me.
Can TM be self-taught, or do you have to always pay a teacher?
Can TM be self-taught? There are many types, it's a great question. There are many types of meditations. Guided meditations you can learn from the internet. Mindfulness meditations, which can be taught in a large group like this. You close your eyes, you're taught how to follow your breath, like that here. But the art and science of actually transcending, of just learning how, having a mantra, and learning how to innocently, effortlessly turn the attention within, that, for some reason, and we've taught this for over 50 years, is best taught one-to-one. Not two people in the room or three people in the room, just when I learn, me and my teacher. And anyone's free to try whatever, but it's so simple when you've got that. Now, TM is a nonprofit organization, and there is a modest course fee that is asked at the time of instruction, which is based on your ability to pay. And that is it for life. So when this wonderful woman learned to meditate in 1960s, it's not like a yoga club dues. And my feeling on it is, you learn it once in your life, learn from a teacher. It's like, it makes it very simple. And then you have the access to your teacher for the rest of your life. But this meditation requires personal instruction. Some people get really complain about it, and they say, well, it's just a way to make money. It ain't. It's just to pay teachers' salaries, and we try to make no obstacles. And the David Lynch Foundation, as I said, has provided scholarships for 600,000 people to learn for free.
I don't even know if this is possible, but I just wanted to shift gears to go from the intellectual inquiry to sort of an experiential one. I was wondering, while we have you here, if you could give us a sampler demo, 3-4 minutes, 5 minutes.
The thing is, it's a wonderful question. We can sit with our eyes closed, which we can, for a minute or two, and not concentrate and not strain, and that's completely fine. But that, and we can do that. If you don't mind, you'll be happy. I'm not talking for a minute or two. But when you get this instruction from a teacher, then it really does something of, oh, like me when I went in and learned. It's frustrating, but that I really would encourage you to have that additional instruction. Because this is not just closing your eyes and counting your breaths or watching, I'm a butterfly landing on a flower. It's actually, and like anything else, if we have our child, we want them to learn how to swim, we give a teacher. They're having, math, you have a tutor. If you have some ailment, you just don't go online, you go find a doctor who can diagnose and prescribe. So if this, and I'm not here to sell nothing, I want to make that very clear. If this interests you, great. If you want to just try something on your own, try something on your own. I'm mainly here to say the problem of stress is real. It's killing us. There are three different approaches. And if you've tried a form of meditation that you're not happy with because it's difficult, don't just think, well, I can't meditate. Keep looking. The stakes are too high. It should be, when you meditate, it should be comfortable, relaxing, easy. And you should feel you should feel that almost instantaneously within a few days. It should not be built up over time. But at the end, we'll take a moment, okay?
A quick question. You mentioned you're working with the district attorney's office in Manhattan. What's the focus of the work? The victims, the defendants, the people?
Right now it's the victims, but we also working, we want to do programs with the perpetrators. So, because it's like crazy not to do that, because that's, so we are working that way. I want to tell a funny story. Just, so I was talking, now, I think I was talking to Laura. I hadn't known any quote-unquote famous person in my life. I used to just tell people, I don't know. And then now with this foundation, because we do all this work with under-resourced populations, a lot of wonderful people have come forth to help raise money. And so Paul McCartney or Katy Perry or whatever. And so I'm going to tell you a story that sort of encapsulates. So I got a phone call. So this is name-droppy, but it's to make a point. So I got a phone call that Ellen DeGeneres wanted to learn to meditate. And I thought, okay, that's great. So I went over to teach her. And before I taught her to meditate, took an hour a day over 4 days, one-to-one, I said, why do you want to learn? And she paused and she said, I want to maintain permanent connection with the intelligence that runs the universe. And I thought, whoa. And then she paused and she said, and I can't sleep at night. And I think that's our lives. It's both. Whether we, the intelligence that runs, we want to be more creative. There's a part of the brain, the imagination center, the default mode network. It's a part of the brain where the most creative ideas come from. And then there's a part of your brain, which is the frontal lobe, which is focus and attention to, and that, so focus. And usually they're at odds with each other. The default mode network, which is you have that activated when you take a hot shower and you get great ideas or you go for a walk. And then this part of the brain, when you're really focused, they're usually at odds with each other. One shuts down or the other one, or the other one shuts down. In the most creative people, they're active simultaneously. They're active. This ability to focus sharp, focus. All right, I'm going to write that music. I'm going to paint that. I'm going to be disciplined and not lose cool ideas, free flow. That is the creative mind, creative brain. And that's what's developed when we transcend. So I'm very grateful that you all schlepped out here, came out here tonight. Really enjoy. And I have to say one more thing. Because I love what I'm doing, I just want to say this. Should you want to, 100% of the proceeds that I get from this book, donating here in Philadelphia, donating back to bring the meditation to inner city school kids for free. So just wanted you to know that. I'm not taking any money from this. It's just that. So thank you all very, very, very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.